You are now tuned into Big Market Bites.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone, and welcome to Big Market Bias. Coming at you live from the West Coast, I'm Cameron Green. And on the East Coast, we've got Peter Daubert. What's happening, Peter?
A lot is happening today, Cam. The trade deadline has come and passed. And we had a very, very eventful day. No, I would say blockbuster trades necessarily, but a lot of little moves, a lot of things happening. Teams making moves. I think personally, and we're here to talk about the trade deadline. We'll get to the Cavaliers a little later in the show, but right now, I think we have to talk about the biggest move of the day, which is of course Patrick Beverley and Cameron Payne getting swapped by contenders. Pat Bev going to the Bucks, Cam Payne and a second round pick going to the Sixers. My mind's blown.
This is what you think is the biggest move of the day?
I mean, you could argue the most impactful, okay? Cam Payne, we just had a couple Bucks fans on here just a couple weeks ago complaining about Cam Payne's defense, saying that they hated him, they wanted him off the team. Now you take a guy who can't defend himself out of a paper bag for a washed Patrick Beverley. Wash Pat Bev, still a decent defender, great locker room guy, as has been meticulously noted, depending on where he is. So suddenly the Bucks, I personally was saying they should go out and get Alex Caruso, someone who can really defend the perimeter for them. They didn't get the perimeter stopper that maybe they were hoping for, but they got a guy who can defend in that side, on that, the three-point line, and can guard small guys, which is what they needed. They fixed the hole. And the Sixers, they did a lot of things. But Cam Payne being on the team, that's huge.
I don't understand it. It almost seemed like the 76ers were sellers all of a sudden. And it's like, I thought Embiid was only out for 4 weeks. Is this them telegraphing that Embiid's going to be hurt longer or something along those lines? Like, it didn't really make sense to me why they would do that, because clearly to me Patrick Beverley is more useful than Cameron Payne. Mm-hmm. And they just gave the Bucks a stopper, like that, someone they desperately, a type of player they desperately needed, like someone who can come on the court and just defend someone. The Bucks definitely benefited from that one. But I mean, if you were to rank like the top five, top six trades that happened this year, the three most impactful trades this year wouldn't have happened today,
Absolutely.
So maybe four and five were the Knicks and the Mavericks, and then yours that you brought up first right off the bat is six. So the Knicks trade for Alec Burks and Bogdanovich, they're deeper than the Pacific Ocean. That was the quote I heard today. Their roster is so deep now. Tom Thibodeau has no reason to run any of these guys into the ground. OG Anunoby is going to be out for the next 3 weeks. He got a little mini operation on his elbow. Should be fine. But they're just going to have so many different players to work with, so much lineup versatility. Bogdanovich will help in the regular season, maybe not so much in the playoffs, but I think that move was made to win in the meantime while OG's out, and then when OG comes back, they're going to be fine in the playoffs. This move didn't push the Knicks over the top. I already was feeling really good about the Knicks, but this is just like icing on top of this, on the cake. Just two players that they could really use that could open up the offense. Alec Burks could really open up the offense for them too. They can both just catch fire and make some threes. Bring some spacing to this offense, essentially. And when they go into the playoffs, like, they're going to have a lot of moves to make, a lot of versatility, a lot of ways to win, honestly. And they'll be able to compete with anyone in the East. I think the Knicks have upgraded to the team that Boston needs to watch out for the most, even more than Milwaukee, because Milwaukee, I mean, Doc Rivers is a fine coach, just fine though, and they upgraded from a bad coach to an okay coach, and he's not going to help them this year in the playoffs. In fact, he's going to probably shoot them in the foot with some of his either adjustments or lack of adjustments. I don't know. To me, the Knicks match up the best with the Celtics. The only thing with the Knicks is that I just don't see a way for them to win the championship. I just don't see a way for them to beat the Nuggets, for example, if they go to the finals. Because I just... Unless they have Mitch back. Maybe. Maybe. But even then, I just don't see them beating the Nuggets. But their path to the finals has never been clearer.
That's very true. I mean, I can't say I'm picking the Knicks to win the finals, but I do see a bit of a path, mostly just because they are a really deep team, and they are going on kind of a tear here. They look really good lately, and, you know, this is exactly the time of the year that you want to peak, you know? And so I look at this team, and I think that they could really push a team like the Bucks. I think they could push the Sixers. I think they could push the Celtics. I think that I wouldn't pick them to go to the finals, and I still wouldn't have them in my like top three of teams I think could come out of the East. But you know, if they made the Eastern Conference Finals, and if they really pushed and made it a very competitive series, and you know, I wouldn't be too surprised. And that doesn't really, you know, today's moves, I don't know how much it really affects it. I mean, I like Bogdanovich, but obviously there's concerns about his defense. Alec Burks, I don't even know if he's going to see any playoff minutes. He might, maybe, but we'll, you know, I'm not holding my breath on that one. But this Knicks team is looking really good. I like what they did. They made some improvements around the margins. They got rid of Evan Fournier, which is kind of a weirdly big contract. So that's great for them for their future. Yeah.
These two moves are specifically thinking about regular season, just maintain the line until OG gets back, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, to me, this is based not just on the moves that they've made this year, but also just on the play that I've seen and the chemistry that they have. I think that they've leapfrogged for me. The Knicks have leapfrogged the Bucks and the 76ers to be the second best team in the East, in my opinion. Now, I don't know if that's a hot take or anything. I mean, yeah, obviously Giannis would be the best player in that series. Of course, Dame might even be better. I don't know. I like right now. I like Brunson better than Damian Lillard because Brunson can fight on defense. He's also just a leader. Like, not that Damian Lillard is not a leader. It's just, I've really been impressed with Brunson's leadership. Like, there was a play I saw where both the coach was freaking out and one of the Knicks offensive players did something dumb and Thibodeau was pissed at him. And Brunson, like, got in between them and was like, hey, shut up and let's just move on, next play forward. And just stopped it, nipped it in the bud. Like, it really, I mean, that sort of stuff just impresses me. Because that just tells me that you have a backbone, you have a good platform, a good floor that you'll never break through, and have these choking moments that Doc Rivers is famous for. And it's just a steady hand on the wheel for them. And then Randall is just going to have so much space to work with that his failings and misgivings aren't going to be as magnified in the playoffs, in my opinion. I would take them against the 76ers. It'd be really tough, the Bucks versus the Knicks. I think I would pick the Knicks, though, just because I trust their two-way impact versus the Bucks have a strong offense and a really good crunch time situation.
This is you can be honest right now and tell me if this is the case. This is truly because the Bucks traded Robin Lopez away to the Kings. I mean, that's really what the core of this take is, right?
I didn't even know he got traded, so...
No! Oh, man. Oh, poor Robin. Oh, he doesn't even... No, hold on. Hold on. I have it up. Yeah. The trade Robin Lopez to the Kings, and then they immediately waived him, and now Robin Lopez is a free agent.
Lakers. Lakers will pick him up, probably. No, I don't know. So yeah, basically for me, just with the way they play, the chemistry, both defense and offense being really, really strong, the Knicks are the second strongest team in the East to me, and I think they match up especially well against the Celtics. So I just don't see how they could beat the Nuggets, but if the Nuggets have something go wrong and don't make it to the finals, it's anyone's game. Anyone's game.
Yeah, the Nuggets are really I really look at the Nuggets and the Celtics as the two kind of best teams in the league. I know that the Nuggets are a little bit further down the standings, but I fully believe that when we get to the playoffs, they'll remind everybody exactly who they are. But another move, speaking of the Boston Celtics, another move that they made today. They made the move for Xavier Tillman yesterday for, I believe, 2 second-rounders, which I was fine with. And honestly, I believed that that was the last move that the Celtics were going to make because, you know, the team looks great. We're number one in the league. There's really no reason to make a big move, to make a big change. But, and getting a guy like Xavier Tillman made sense. You know, another big... that we could throw in just in case KP gets hurt or Horford gets hurt. Or, you know, he's a good defender. Kind of a zero on offense, but that's fine because we're not looking for...
He's a negative on offense. Yeah. But he's a strong defensive player.
Yes. Yeah, he is. But today we got the Celtics trading for Jaden Springer for a second-round pick, and that's it. Kind of surprising.
I don't understand that one at all. Like, what is Daryl Morey doing? Why is he giving the Celtics someone that they could put in the rotation in the playoffs? Like, what the hell?
It's a very... he's a very legitimately good defensive player. And in a system that really rewards good defensive players. And the fact that, you know, I don't know how much he can play. I don't know, you know, because offensively, he's never really been given much of a load. I don't know how much he can really contribute on that. But just having another body who can defend multiple levels, who can defend small guards, which is important in the East, because we're dealing with, of course, Damian Lillard. We're dealing with Jalen Brunson. We're dealing with Tyrese Maxey. We're dealing with Tyrese Halliburton. We are dealing with Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, potentially, on the Cavs. So we already have... Drew Holiday, we already have Derek White, we already have a very, very solid defense, and this just adds to it for, I mean, Brad Stevens is just giving away these second rounders, because why not? And it's pretty incredible. I'm really happy with the move. I'm happy with everything that the Celtics did in this trade deadline.
Yeah, Tillman is a next year move for sure, and even the Springer could be potentially construed as a next year move as well, but it could maybe help this year. But Tillman, I mean, I was a little bit pissed about that because all this time, this whole year, you know, I've been talking about the Memphis Grizzlies needing a center. And then they got rid of after they traded away Adams, and then they traded away Tillman. And it's just like, I mean, okay, Tillman fits really well with what the Celtics want to do because he doesn't need to do anything on offense. He could just be the guy who crashes the boards and sets picks and whatever, does the dirty work. And then on defense, he's perfect for the Celtics. So I think next year he might even be starting for the Celtics. Like, it's a pretty good move for next year, especially for a contender to make such a smart move looking to the next year. That's kind of unheard of.
If somebody is gone from the starting lineup, I could see maybe... I'm a believer in Xavier Tillman. I mean, he's still a young player. So, I mean, I feel good about it. Right now, he really is just insurance for Porzingis and for Horford, you know, because these guys very well could get hurt. They might get hurt. They probably will get hurt if the past, you know, few years of KP's career is any indication. He will get hurt at the most inopportune times. So yes, having just another guy back there who can fill his spot makes me feel just overall great. I also wanted to quickly touch, I know we talked a little bit about the Sixers doing, but we didn't actually talk about the biggest move that the Sixers made today, which was trading for Indiana Pacers' Buddy Hield. So the full trade, just for anyone who isn't aware, the Pacers traded away Buddy Hield to the Sixers for Marcus Morris and Furkan Korkmaz, who they did waive, and 3 second rounders.
I thought it was odd that they waived him.
Yeah, I mean, Korkmaz has weirdly wanted out of the Sixers for a long time, and it's been like kind of public about that. Like, there's like known trade requests from like 3 years ago that have just never been fulfilled, and finally, I guess, Korkmaz is off the Sixers. I mean, I don't fully get it. I don't get why you would trade Buddy Hield away if you're just going to get rid of Korkmaz. Because it's just like basically Marcus Morris in 3 seconds. And I mean, I guess the market for Buddy wasn't very high. It wasn't really that competitive because Buddy has had a pretty down year. But just from the Sixers' perspective, I really like the move. I know that Buddy has had a down year. I get it. Totally understand. But at the end of the day, this is a dude who can shoot. This is a dude who doesn't need the ball in his hands, who's been kind of playing for a while, and kind of fits perfectly next to Tyrese Maxey. And he just offers more spacing for Embiid. He's a reliable shooter. I think this is just a home run. And frankly, Korkmaz wasn't doing much for you. Marcus Morris, I mean, he's just not a winning player. He's not somebody you want if you're truly trying to contend. And frankly, second round picks mean basically nothing. So, you know, I look at this as like the Sixers dumped a bunch of garbage and they got a genuinely useful player out of it. So,
yes,
this is great.
Totally. I think another good move was the Suns getting Royce O'Neal. I'm actually a little bit annoyed about the deal because I'm like, why couldn't the Lakers have gotten Royce O'Neal for that price? Because all they did was they got Royce O'Neal and David Roddy for a trio of second-round picks. Brooklyn is receiving Kieta Bates-Diop and Jordan Goodwin. Oh, wasn't Jordan Goodwin supposed to be, like, the point guard of the Suns? What happened there, guys? Anyways. And Yuta Watanabe and Chimezie Metu will go to Memphis. So they did get rid of four of those end-of-the-bench guys, basically. Two of them, three of them, I had so many Suns fans telling me that these guys were going to be so important to the rotation, how good they were, oh my god, blah, 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 blah. And now they just are nothing. They're worth nothing. They're worth less than in a second-round pick. But somehow, they got Royce O'Neal out of it. Really good move, fits exactly what they need. That's a great move for the Suns.
Yeah, I mean, I like Royce. I think he's a useful player. He's a decent, like, yeah, he's a useful player. You know, there's not a ton to say about him because I don't know how much he really moves the needle for the Suns. I don't think during the playoffs we're going to be saying, wow, that Royce O'Neal acquisition really saved this Phoenix Suns season, you know, but he's a good role player, and frankly, you weren't getting a ton out of those four guys anyway. They were, despite what some Suns fans may believe, they were not very good after all. Now you got a useful player out of it. I don't know how much is really going to matter for the Suns. They have a couple, I believe they have two roster spots now that they can use for buyout guys, so maybe that's useful. Maybe they go out and get a Kyle Lowry, who's kind of weirdly, like, kind of a big buyout target this year, assuming the Hornets buy him out, which they still haven't, so we don't know. But
since they're so far over the salary cap, aren't they limited in their buyout options?
Oh, you know, I don't have their cap number in front of me, but I think you might be right, actually.
Yeah. I think it artificially deflates how much they can spend on buyout market dudes. And the only reason I am aware of this at all is because the Lakers specifically can offer the most money to buyout candidates. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure the Suns are gonna. I mean, they'll have options for the buyout market, but they're not going to be getting the pick of the litter because they're not going to be able to offer as much money as other people. So, in fact, let's see. I have it here. So the following teams are ineligible to sign a player waived and had a pre-existing salary of more than $12.4 million. Warriors, Clippers, Celtics, Suns, Bucks, Nuggets, and Heat.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know, this is kind of crazy because in the past it was like buyout guys, all the contenders would be after them, kind of competing with each other. But now with this new CBA in place, they really penalize the teams that spend. So if you are unaware of how salary cap works, there's aprons. There's the first apron, there's a second apron, and then there's a luxury tax. And as you spend more and more money, you get through the first apron, the second apron, and into the luxury tax. However much money you're spending in the luxury tax, you basically have to pay in taxes times three. So it's just really costly. Only the richest teams can do that. The Warriors have been doing it forever. The Knicks could do it if they wanted to. Usually the Lakers are up there. But now, with this new CBA in place, if you're spending like crazy, you're going to be, the hammer's going to drop, and it's really going to limit your options when it comes to buyout markets, building around the margins of the team. So when you're building a contender, you really don't want to be getting into the luxury tax until you're ready to be in the finals. Like, every piece is ready to go. It's really interesting, and it's going to have a ripple effect going forward.
That's, yeah, and it's really interesting to see how teams, I think, have navigated that, because you've seen a lot of, like, especially today, you've seen a lot of, like, little cap shenanigans, like the fact that, I mean, this isn't the biggest trade in the world, but the fact that Dennis Schroeder and Spencer Dinwiddie were basically swapped by the Raptors and the Nets, but then you find out that, I'm just going to read this tweet from Shams, where he says, to avoid a $1.5 million upcoming contract bonus for games played, the Toronto Raptors are planning to waive Spencer Dinwiddie. So they shipped out Dennis Schroeder and Thad Young for Spencer Dinwiddie and then immediately waived him. And I think that that's all cap shenanigans. That's all them just trying to make sure they stay under the cap, stay where they are. And it's fun.
Because that's a useful lot of player.
Teams have been doing that.
Yeah. Dinwiddie's
exactly
not useless. He's not. Yeah. I mean, that's like number one buyout candidate for the Lakers is getting Dinwiddie. So I'd be honestly stoked about it. I mean, I know he's kind of a high in his own supply, one of those tech bros and Bitcoin people or whatever, but he's also my wife's former classmate.
Really?
yeah. We've talked about
that's
it
before. Amazing.
But yeah, that'd be, I mean, amazing. I think it'd be really useful for the Lakers to have a player like Spencer Dinwiddie on their team.
And, you know, speaking of the Lakers a little bit.
Okay.
I wanted to, because I was thinking about, because I saw a tweet from Keith Smith, at Keith Smith NBA, where he says that out of 20 total NBA trades in this last week, that it involved 23 teams. The teams that were not involved in a single trade in the past week are the Hawks, the Bulls, the Cavaliers, the Heat, the Pelicans, the Magic, and the Lakers. Now, I'm curious for you, as somebody who is a Lakers fan, who wanted D'Angelo Russell off the team and all these things, you had so many feelings, to kind of walk away from the trade deadline with nothing. Moves. I'm just kind of, I am a little curious on how you're feeling.
I mean, I'm not happy about it, but it's also like there's this concept called the Lakers tax, where if the Lakers want to make a trade, every single NBA team out there is trying to take as much as they can. So, like, we were in talks for DeJounte Murray, but they really wanted the first round pick from 2029, which is extremely valuable, obviously. along with D'Lo and other pieces. And eventually got to the point where I was like, trading our 2029 pick is a bridge too far for that. If they wanted to do just D'Lo for Murray and maybe some second rounders, let's do it. But I get hanging on to that first round pick, unless it's going to significantly alter the trajectory of the team. Murray's not going to move the needle enough. Also, D'Lo's been playing out of his mind lately. He's been absolutely incredible. I don't believe it's real, and I'm sure it's going to bite us in the playoffs. But he's been extremely, extremely accurate shooting. He's been moving the ball better. He's hitting AD and LeBron when they're open. He's active defensively and in the passing lanes. It's everything we'd ever want from him. And up, you know, they won three before the trade deadline in a row. One of those games was an entirely bench unit without LeBron or AD beating the Boston Celtics. And it was just so grand. I think we should talk about it.
that game didn't happen, actually. It was fake.
Well, any game where Porzingis misses doesn't count, I know. But Porzingis played this
game. That's true. Yeah, but I'm pretty sure somebody on the Celtics was injured, so it actually means nothing. Actually, Joe Mazzulla had a cold, so it didn't actually mean anything. He wasn't fully right, you know?
Yeah, yeah. The vibes were off.
Exactly.
No, but you know, so I mean, he does there's some hope. There's a little bit of hope for the Lakers. I'm not sold. I'm really interested in what buyout. I don't think we talked about this. One player I really wanted the Lakers to get, who did get traded, but to the Raptors, was Kelly Olynyk. I think that's a player that we should target in the offseason, because I think it'd be just perfect. Because his defense has gotten better over the years. He's solid defensively. And he's a solid two-way player at this point, I would say. He's a solid two-way player off the bench. He could even start for the Lakers, probably. But no, the Raptors have to get him, because why? I don't know. The Raptors, do they have a plan? Maybe. Is it a good one? Probably not.
No, this is actually a perfect segue to talk about this trade. I'm just going to read you this trade, and I just want you to tell me how you feel, okay? So the Utah Jazz are sending Kelly Olynyk, and this is going to be hard. I'm probably going to get this pronunciation wrong. I truly, Ochai Agbaji, I think that's wrong. I'm so sorry. They're sending those two players to the Toronto Raptors for Kira Lewis, Otto Porter Jr., and a 2024 first round pick. So they are, to be clear, the Raptors are spending a first on Kelly Olynyk and this other guy. How are you feeling?
Why are they buyers? Why? They're 13th in the East right now. Last year, same thing. They were like 10th to 12th in the East, and they were buying. They were sending first-round draft picks out the door. Masai is so washed, dude. Like, he's not a good executive anymore.
It's so brutal. I don't understand it.
Let me qualify. 2024 first round this year is basically a second round pick.
Well, listen, I mean, they haven't been doing very well. It's going to be a good pick.
It's going to be a lottery pick. This is absolutely insane.
It's going to be a lottery pick. And even, I understand it's a bad draft. I know that's what people say, but it's still a lottery pick in the NBA draft.
No, you're right. Like, they can get anyone. Like, there's all these Europe players that we have no idea if they're going to be good or not. You can take a chance on one of these guys, and they might hit. I mean, it upsets me. It upsets me. And I'm not a Raptors fan at all or anything. It's just poor Canada.
It's really interesting. You know, I guess you really believe in Ochai here. And it's possible, and maybe he's a good guy. Maybe he can you know, elevate the Raptors in the coming years when he grows. But I look at this and I just say, you know, why? Why are you spending first? That's, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers We have the Stepien rule for a reason. Because the Cleveland Cavaliers were so inept because they just kept spending their firsts for these kind of middling players trying to keep competing, to the point where the NBA had to literally bring in a rule that said you cannot trade consecutive first-round picks because of this guy, because he screwed up the Cavs' trajectory so much. And now you look at this, and it's like, Masai, you're supposed to be rebuilding. Why are you spending first? I don't care if Kelly is good. I don't care if Ochai turns out to be a legitimately useful player. You should not be spending first-round picks under any circumstances. And this is for this season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you 100%. I mean, even in our Discord, most of us are in agreement that Masai, we just don't understand what he's doing anymore. And feel bad for Raptors fans. But what I want to talk about next is the Dallas Mavericks. So PJ Washington, I was hoping that's another player that I thought maybe the Lakers could use. They got PJ Washington and they got Daniel Gafford. So right now Derek Lively's hurt. When Derek Lively comes back, and him and Gafford are basically the two centers that play the whole game, 48 minutes. They're going to have competent center play for the entire game. That's great. PJ Washington, getting rid of Grant Williams, he has been a disappointment this year, even though he was amazing like the first 2 weeks of the season. It's been horrible since then. So that he was a nothing burger, and they turned it into PJ Washington, who's good, who's skilled. He might start for them right away. And I know that his defensive numbers aren't so good, and you watch him, and his effort is bad, but he was on the Hornets. He didn't care about defense because they didn't care about defense. They didn't care about winning. So if you just give me PJ Washington with some effort, that's a really good move. Mavericks needed a bigger move, I think, to get up into the upper echelon of the West, but... they might have a top five offense now.
Yeah, I mean, I like PJ Washington. You know, he's been basically in basketball Siberia, you know, irrelevancy for years. So it's honestly kind of hard to evaluate him because it's like, well, how much has he been trying? You know, how much he doesn't have like pieces around him really that makes a ton of sense. His point guard has been missing three quarters of the year, every year, basically. You know, so it's hard to evaluate him. Now, they got him. They got him for Grant Williams, Seth Curry, and a first. They sent out a top two protected 2027 first to Charlotte. I love this move for Charlotte, which we can talk about Charlotte in a second because they made two moves that are of some significance today. But from the Mavericks' point of view, getting both these guys, I think, is solid. They for Gafford, all they had to give up was Rashawn Holmes, which is fine, and the 2024 first-round pick that was the Thunder pick. So the Thunder pick, I mean, that's going to be in the high 20s anyway, you know? So it's basically a second. So you're really not giving up a ton. I mean, missing Grant kind of hurts, but Grant Williams isn't the player he used to be. So how much are you really...
Also, theoretically, a locker room cancer.
Yeah, exactly. That's a big part of it. So getting PJ and Gafford, I think, is a win. They need defense. They need big guys who can play next to Luka. I like Lively as well, but they need more size. They need more size on this team because their two best players are Luka and Kyrie, two small guards who do not defend very well. So
I wouldn't call Luka small, but yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how much will it matter? How much will it really move the needle? I don't really know. It's kind of hard to say, but I could see a world where PJ Washington, you know, all of a sudden he's in Dallas, all of a sudden he's playing next to Kyrie freaking Irving and Luka freaking Doncic, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to start. Here we go. Like this, I'm going to try. I want to be good next to these guys. I want to be the third best player on this team, which he's probably, I would say, probably the fourth or maybe the fifth. We'll see. But, you know, and he really cares. He really tries. He buys in to his role. If him and Gafford can both do that, you could see, I say, a significant increase. Obviously, they're going up against a lot of big men. You know, they have to go through the Nuggets. That's Nikola Jokic right there. You go the Timberwolves, Karl Anthony Towns, and Rudy Gobert. Even the Thunder have Chet. You know, so you need somebody who is big and can defend big dudes. And they have definitely upgraded in that department. So,
In the West, you need size. In the East, you need guard defense. That's basically the theme.
But in the East, you also need size, too, because you still have to deal with Giannis and Embiid, assuming he comes back. So, Poisingis a lot. And Tatum. But for the Hornets, obviously they made this move, sending P.J. Washington out for a first-round pick, which I think, you know, depending on how things go with Luka, could potentially be a good pick. Probably not. But they also sent Gordon Hayward to the Thunder for Trey Mann and Davis Bertans. And I got to say, you know, absolute win for Charlotte. They sent away two pretty good players, I think. Gordon Hayward is not who he used to be. He's also very injury prone. So they shipped out those two guys. They got a first round pick. They got Trey Mann, who's like a legitimately good young guy, and Davis Bertans, who it might be completely nothing and might be out of the league by the end of this year. But hey, you made him something. You turned Gordon Hayward and PJ Washington, these players who weren't going to be a part of your future, who, you know, who weren't really moving the needle for you now, obviously, into real future assets. And I like that. I'm happy that the Hornets are finally making some moves. They're doing something. Whoa. Look at them.
Whoa. This is not your Michael Jordan's Hornets.
I mean, I'm not, I'm still not a big fan of Gordon Hayward. He's really, really injury prone. So for the Thunder, I don't like the idea necessarily of relying on him, but they're not really relying on him because I don't even know if he's going to start for this team. I don't think he will. I think
I'm a little annoyed with the Thunder. I think that they have a legitimate chance to win the championship this year, and they're just squandering it because they just refuse to get size behind Chet. They just do. I mean, that is the clear and obvious move, is to get a five who can, it doesn't have to be starting. It doesn't have to be a starting five. It just could be a five who can start from time to time and take care of the big bodies that Chet struggles with. And I mean, the Thunder have a clear weakness against teams with size, Timberwolves, Lakers, Nuggets. And it's like, you know, I mean, Zach Lowe wrote it years ago, if you have 10% chance to win the championship, you go for it. You go for it every time. Because you don't know when that chance will come back. You never know. I mean, knock on wood, okay? Chet is amazing. I think he's going to have a long, fulfilling career. But he could get hurt next year and have chronic knee problems the rest of his life. And you had your chance this year to go for the championship and didn't take it. And will rue the day for the rest of your days. You know, that's just a little bit, that's my beef, I guess. Sam Presti has all these first round draft picks to work with. He has all these pieces, all these young players, depth beyond the, like, they have so much depth that they can't even play all their guys every night. And you could put some of this stuff together and package stuff together, because nobody else has the pieces you do. Nobody else can do a Godfather offer like you. Go out there, get Pascal Siakam. Go get a center who can defend behind Chet. Start making some moves, because before you know it, you'll have drafted Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, Serge Ibaka, and James Harden, and have zero championships to show for it. It's like they haven't learned from their mistakes. Or he hasn't learned from his mistakes. I don't know. Rant over.
Well, if I may play, I guess, devil's advocate a little bit here, I do mostly agree with you. I do think it was probably a mistake not to get somebody big, somebody of size. But if you're looking at it through this from Sam Presti's perspective, maybe he's thinking, listen, we're not going to win the battle of the big man anyway. There's no big man we can get that's realistically going to move the needle. So we're best playing small, and we're just going to lean into that. We're going to say, hey, we are playing small, and we're just going to try to force the opposing team to play small with us. Chet is kind of the perfect small ball five. Now, there's a very realistic possibility that, let's say, they get matched with the Lakers, and the Lakers can just big body them. AD can go crazy, and they can just kind of take over with size. Or, you know, maybe instead they go against the Lakers and they're able to outpace them. They're able to move quickly. They're able to spread the floor and kind of force the Lakers themselves to go a little smaller than they like. It's kind of that, you know, we're going to try and force you to play the way we want, kind of like the Warriors did, except this team isn't quite as good as that peak Warriors team, but I can see the mentality of it, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it hasn't worked so far against the Lakers. The Lakers have beat the Thunder every single time. And it's they're not on the same playing field. Like, the Thunder should be, well, they are clearly the better team than the Lakers. And yet, when the Lakers go against them, it looks like the Lakers are better when they go against each other, which we know they're not. We know they're not right now. But so that's where I'm like, okay, if the Lakers can get to the play-in and the 7 seed, even though they should be better than that, and then they go against the Thunder as a 2 seed, like, that, I would be happy. It'd be exactly like the Memphis situation last year, where I'm like, oh, go against the Grizzlies without Adams? Great. You know? I've stated exactly what I think, and I can't overstate it any further.
That's totally fair.
But you make very good points, and I do agree with you that, I mean, pretty much any other team out there, I agree with that. It just seems like specifically the Lakers, for whatever reason, have the Thunder's number in this. They just know how to beat up on smaller teams, I guess.
And maybe this is also in part, you know, you're thinking, hey, we are a top-tier West team. There's a really good chance we go up against the Timberwolves and Rudy Gobert. You don't go large against Rudy Gobert. You go small. You try to bring him out into the three-point line. So in that situation, there's no point in having a big guy.
Totally, totally. No, that's a very good point. That's a really, really smart point. The Thunder could dominate the Timberwolves by going small. Totally. AD, I guess, is a kryptonite to that strategy because he's big in small lineups. If they go small, they still have Anthony Davis out there.
Yeah, and he can defend the perimeter it very, very well. So AD is kind of saying, hey, go small against me, see what happens. Whereas Rudy Gobert, we've seen it time and time again, cannot defend the perimeter. You can bring him out into the three-point line, and you can abuse him.
So we're approaching about 50 minutes. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the draft?
Well,
Is there anything else you want to say about the trade deadline?
no other real trades catch my eye. I will say the Pistons released Killian Hayes. They just dropped him. Oh, you didn't see that?
I didn't.
They completely dropped Killian Hayes. They just released him. They didn't even trade him.
Kevin O'Connor is going to his Twitter and he's saying, "Someone needs to pick up Killian Hayes right now." I bet
that's exactly what he did. Yes.
No way.
Yeah, he said the Spurs. Would you like Killian Hayes? Pair with Wemby.
Damn it. That's smart. That's actually smart.
Thanks for tuning in to Big Market Bias. If you have any strong opinions on anything we said here today, please email us at bigmarketbias@gmail.com. If you hear a credible NBA analyst with a prediction, send that in to us as well. We're getting a lot of predictions this time of year after the trade deadline. Send them in. We want to hear it. We're going to have some updates on that. Have a great weekend, everyone. Peter and Cam.